Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
My name is John, and I am an alcoholic. Stayed on Alcoholics Anonymous enough, you get introduced in a lot of different ways, and that's the first time I got my last name on tape. Now, I have no problem with that whatsoever because it's in the spirit of anonymity. Anonymity is not a problem or a requirement within the rooms, the hallowed halls of Alcoholics Anonymous itself. Our tradition tells us that goes at the level of press, radio, and television, and not within the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a lot of things that about these traditions that I'm one who came into the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I give you just a little brief outline on this one. Is that I came in here believing I knew a great deal more than I, in true fact, actually knew how to do. I had outperformed and outmaneuvered to stay alive in a world that I considered hostile from my first day. I have always been a businessman. My father, in the process of raising his children between drunks, swore, and by all that was holy, none of his sons will ever work for a living. And that meant to me that I was not going to work with my hands, and I, to this day, abhor dirty hands. And that you. So I've always been a businessman, and I've always had an intense desire to succeed. And I've enjoyed many, many successes and many, many failures. As it sits in with the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I am one success ahead of all of my failures because I'm here and I am sober. And the business end of it is working quite well. But for the first time, when I came into the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I became aware shortly after arriving here that everything that I had that had any value to me was really gone for me, and should have been gone, because I had drank it away, and I wasn't fit to go back there and try and get anything back. Within the fellowship, you have promised me that I would, if I did certain simple things, that I would have new things given to me, and that appealed to me. I did like most of us have done. I went into the 12 steps of recovery. I received a sponsor, got a sponsor. I worked the 12 steps of recovery, and I paid no attention to the traditions whatsoever. I listened to them, but I was obviously far too spiritual to have to pay any attention to that sort of stuff. I was told that you have to pay attention to what everybody says in sobriety, including yourself, because sometimes even you might say something that you need to hear. And in keeping with that, I have learned some very valuable lessons, not only out of my own mouth, but I've learned some tremendous lessons. And one of the greatest lessons, one of the absolute great lessons I have learned in sobriety, has come in from my Al-Anon daughter, who had a privilege a long time ago when Saturday Night Live was relatively new, of chairing a meeting here at Saturday Night Live. And one of the topic that she spoke at this podium was the spiritual principles contained in the 12 steps of recovery. And she had us ask a simple question when she was sharing it, and she said, "What are the principles?" And I sat there so preening and so proud and all-knowing, and she called on a great number of young men that I sponsored, and I kept expecting them to offer principles that I knew, and I found out that I never taught them. And they didn't know them. And everyone seemed to be stumbling around, including myself, after I got and started looking and doing my own inventory. And so I then started to look at the 12th step of recovery a great deal differently than I ever had before. And when it said, practice these principles in all of my affairs, I had to find out and what it was that it was making my life work so well. Over and above the 12 steps of recovery, I needed to know what principles were. Okay. I have a point in this, and I'm getting there. So don't get bored. Okay. What do principles have to do with the 12 traditions? Well, because without the 12 traditions, first of all, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous would not exist. Because that is the only thing that has preserved this fellowship. I understand the history books will tell us that twice since the dawn of mankind, there have been fellowships developed that had the solution, if you would, to the alcohol problems. Okay. Way back when back in the 1800s or 1700s, there was a fellowship that came up and worked well. I don't even remember what the name of it was. And then we had the Oxford movement, which was powerful. And we are an outgrowth, if you will, the supporting fellowship that when the alcoholics first got sober was the Oxford movement. But they got involved, as the first one did, in the political controversies. And all of these 12 traditions were developed to avoid the failure that existed in what history has said will fail unless there are some proper safeguards. And I started looking at these 12 steps to find out what the principles that were contained within those 12 steps. And after I had done and had basically had some satisfaction, and I started looking and finding in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous traditions or principles by which I could live my life. And I found an amazing series of things that were happening for me. My life worked. It worked better than I had ever dreamed it possible. I commented at the start that I had been a businessman and have had enjoyed great successes and great failures. It seemed as if for some reason I could never do a sustained effort at anything. I destroyed my first marriage and my wife committed suicide, predominantly, at least so I understand it, because she couldn't stand living with me. I destroyed my second marriage because when I got here, it was but an endurance contest. The children that I loved desperately all ran away from me and were afraid of me, and it left me. And they were afraid of me, and it just that simple. The youngest child that was in my house was always in the other room when I got here. And I was a failure one more time. God knows how many times I have risen above and failed. And when I got here, I knew that. And I knew that I did not have a means by which I could live my life successfully for any period of time. Making money and losing money is all I could do. Losing at life, I was consistent at. So these principles gave me a means by which I could live my life in a whole new fashion. And so I started looking at if these traditions, these principles contained within the traditions of these 12 principles, or 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, are sufficient enough to keep the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous alive and well for the period of time that it has been and is, then perhaps there's something in there that might be of some great benefit to me personally. Because when I first looked at this, I had difficulty understanding about the first tradition, our common welfare should come first, and that personal recovery depended upon AA unity, until I started looking within myself to find out what is my spiritual principle contained in that. Because if it works for Alcoholics Anonymous, it will work for me. And how do I make it real and personal to me so that I can walk down the street with a tradition that will guarantee me the good life, an ability to stay tall in the saddle, if you would, stay on the firing line of life, do the things that I want to do without all of the controversy and the pain and the agony that has existed prior to getting here. Just because I got sober and alcohol was no longer in my life was no guarantee that I knew how to do life, because the book told me that the problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind. So it says that the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous is the most cherished possession we have. And I started to look at that and I realized that if the group is not here, if there was no group, when this young man came to me of my seventh day, on his seventh day of sobriety, when he persuaded me to come to an AA meeting and there be no group here, I would have certainly died. Or at worst, have continued to live the way I was living, with no hope of any recovery. And so I turned this thing around about our common welfare comes first. personal recovery depends upon the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous. There must be a room here. There has to be a room for me. And then I say that, well, if that be the case, my personal recovery depends upon my unity with you. Now that starts to change my attitude. As soon as I say that, I have to stop doing a lot of things that I used to be able to do. I have to start cooperating with the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous because I truly believe that my personal recovery depends upon my unity with you. I cannot come here if I fight with you. If I get enough resentments with you, I will have to leave or drink, surely. I have to have this thing. I have to contribute to the whole. We all know that those of us who have been here for any period of time have seen the people that have had to drink. And it is invariably caused by a lot of things, but in my personal opinion, it seemed to be that they were not in unity with the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. They had some problems they could not resolve. Certainly the disease of alcoholism, without exception. I will never contest that. And I'm not saying this is one simple cause. I'm saying that my unity, my welfare comes, my personal recovery and welfare depends by unity with Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I broad form that just a little bit larger and start to talk about being unified with the world and all of its people around me. So my personal belief that the first tradition is that my recovery depends upon my unity with Alcoholics Anonymous. Now it talks about this second tradition. It talks about one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience, and our leaders are not our trusted servants. They are not leaders. Freudian slip there. But you see, it has to be a Freudian slip. It certainly was not on purpose, because I know that my very life depends upon my unity here. And that if I have fault with anyone here, I would take it with them, and it would never come from the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous. It cannot be done that way. My recovery depends upon my unity with you. And when I talk about, we have, as of course, because we come from all walks of life, from all places in the face of this earth, all of us have got grandiose ideas and want to lead the parade and not be responsible for organizing the parade. We all like to be able to say, I did that, don't look at me, but I really did that. Look at me. Okay? And it's that funny little saying that we used to have when we were kids. Look at me, don't look at me. He's looking at me, Mommy. You know, that's the way it goes. Okay? We all like the grandstanding. We all like to do that. But we don't want to be seen except when we want to be seen. And our leader, we have people that obviously are running in power plays and doing those things because we are all but human. Now and I was taught, and this tradition has taught me that if I lead, I must lead by example. I have no other way. I cannot lead by standing up here and trying to order you around. Does that work in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous? Yet we try. Okay. Can I buy your favors? Yeah, some of you, perhaps. Because we are making of all walks of life, and I'm not downtrodden, and I've got to keep some life in this thing, otherwise I'm going to get bored. But I'm talking about the example that I set. I have to go and do my own inventory, and I have either given a go. I'm either an example of what to do or an example of what not to do. Okay. And I have preferred, because I have a responsibility. And I believe those of us, after we've been here for any length of time, and it doesn't take long, have a responsibility. Because we have come out from under. From a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, we have come in. People who have had no hope come into the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and are given a new life. And that is the responsibility that I think we owe. I certainly do. To the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, to be the best person I know how to be. And therefore lead by example. I strongly consider is the necessity for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I backtracked just a little bit, just to reinforce my comments. I wanted to go back just and read a section out of the first tradition to perhaps to clarify. In the long form, it says that an AA member has to, and that's harsh words, has to conform to the principles of recovery. His life actually depends upon obedience to spiritual principles. I say that because it is necessary for me to reemphasize and reemphasize this. I'm not on some ego trip trying to teach you what I've learned and say this is the right thing. I'm saying, and this is why I had to jump back there, is the beauty of this is that the message is there for you and it's the message is there for me. And I was taught originally that a spiritual person is a man or a woman or a teacher who says that the truth is within you. Find it and use it. Don't take mine if you disagree with it. Find your own, and it's there, but you have to seek for it. And it will be a principle that will work in all of your affairs without any exception whatsoever. Okay. When I talk about leading by example, okay, they refer to panhandlers in here. Okay. The people that panhandle, and panhandling is goes in a lot of different areas, not just for money, or perhaps for affection, or for this, or for that, or the other thing. It is, in my honest opinion, panhandling is perhaps but a form of prostitution. And it is not the example. I look to you and I say, had you come to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and when you did come, what brought you back? Was it the fact that the people in the room were all ugly and distasteful and no one had anything that offered any appeal whatsoever? Okay. I think that's unlikely, even though some of us might insist that be true. Okay. I think it was that there was somebody out there, at least one person in that room, that had a demeanor or a bearing or an attitude that impressed us in some fashion, favorably, sufficient enough to come back. I am so grateful that when I did get sober, or when I walked into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, there were some powerful people in there that I admire to this day. Okay. Still sober. They were leading by their example. And I hope sincerely that all of us can adopt at least that philosophy, because there is no way that you can order, that you can maneuver, you can buy or sell sobriety. My total belief is that it is, for me, most assuredly, leading by example is a mandatory thing. It says in our third tradition that the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Okay. Now, I read it back. If you go back into the preface of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, okay, I read that back then when it was written, and it's still there, it says the only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. And then I see these traditions, they took out the word honesty. Okay, and I think that's rather significant. It was to me. I pay attention to a lot of things in here because some of them are vitally important. And the reason I say that is because that appeared to me, that tradition, in my uninformed attitude when I got here. That tradition led me to believe that I was not wanted here because, frankly, and when I first got here, I did not have an honest desire to stop drinking. Okay. And when I saw this, it changed to a desire to stop drinking, and it therefore let me be free to come here and stay here because it almost gave me a blank check to say it's okay for you to be here with a dishonest desire to stop drinking. Because I have found something, and I'm aware of it, and you may be too, is that as soon as I wanted this thing, after a short period of time, I wanted sobriety, and I wanted it bad. But I had never joined anything, and I do not know, or did not then know, how to mingle with my fellows. I know how to sell. I know how to be a businessman. I know how to hire, fire and negotiate all sorts of contracts. I was a miserable father, I was a miserable husband, and I was a miserable, in my opinion, human being. And I did not know how to interface or join anything. My joke was, I've never joined anything up to and including the human race. I came in here and I wanted this thing. And I would go home and I would cry with my wife and I would say to her, "Oh God, I want this thing." And she said, "Willie, you can have it." And yes, but I said, "I don't belong." And she said, "Yes, you do." And I said, "But I had this thing. I don't belong. I've never belonged to anything." And I had to fight this thing over and over and over again. And this tradition then said to me that you become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous as soon as you declare yourself. You see, up until that point, I had been walking into AA meetings, and I had been sitting down. I'd been claiming my chair, and you told me I couldn't take that chair, or no one could take that chair. I had drank it. I owned it. I'd paid for it. Blood, sweat, and tears, agony and pain, horrible, unmitigated suffering that had gone all those years, bought that chair. But it still did not buy me a membership in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Then the words came to me in my own mind that I am a member as soon as I declare myself. And suddenly I fit. You see, because what happened to me and up until that point is that this was a strange place. You people were weird. You asked me to do stuff I had never done before in my life. You asked me to do things, say things, read things, act differently than I had ever been in my own life, done in my entire life. And you said the only requirement is a desire to stop drinking. And I said, "Well, what does that mean to me?" And then I became aware of the fact that when it says that you cannot, we cannot, no one in Alcoholics Anonymous can deny you a membership, we don't want to keep you out, it's yours when you declare yourself. And then I become aware of, my God, all I've been looking for and the only reason I didn't belong is because I didn't think it was safe. And I think that everybody needs a safe place. Everybody needs a safe place to come to. Okay. Security. Home. The principle of Alcoholics Anonymous, or in the third step, or the third tradition for me, is security, a safe place. I come here and I rest when I'm disturbed. I come here, I share when I'm excited. I come here. It has never let me down. No one can ever take you out of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. The only person that can remove you from this room is standing in your shoes and sitting in your chair. That's the only person. And I needed to know that. I needed to know it then. I need to know that now. See, we've had a privilege of, since I have gotten sober, we've done a lot of traveling because the gods have been fortunate to me and good to me, and we've enjoyed some successes and we've done some things. And wherever I go, I have the security of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous because I am a member. There is a necessary need in the heart of every man, woman, and child to have a safe place. Why is it that we are so concerned when we have to go and move and do things like that? But wherever I go in the face of this earth, or wherever you will go on the face of this earth, there is a home there for you. Security. It is the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I believe everyone needs it. And what happens when I become aware of that, I once again have to start treating the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and these rooms differently. Some of the games that I was used to playing before that had to go beside the board. No more could I do those funny little games. I had to treat this as I would my own house. Now, many people have been in my house, and we have a beautiful home. It's not that it's rich or luxurious. It's none of those things, although it's quite well. It is a comforting place. It is a place where people who walk in say, "What a nice house you have." And it isn't fancy. It's safe. It's secure. And I think that quite often that's the way it is and should be in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can do nothing to disturb your security. That is vital. I have no rights to do that. So the third tradition, as I say, is a need of security. I cannot order you around. I cannot change you. I can offer you, by example that I shared only or earlier, who, as it says in our long form, who dared to be judge, jury, and executioner of his own sick brother? Who dares? Many of us. But because I am aware of my personal involvement in this tradition, I dare not. Because it is now a spiritual principle for me, and I cannot do the things that I used to do. The fourth tradition. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups as a whole. We have the right within the fellowship here, within this fellowship of Saturday Night Live, to do whatever we choose to do within the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, within the fellowship contained called Saturday Night Live, as long as it does not interfere with any other groups in this valley. Okay. Now, I had to look at that and say, well, what is that? How does that affect me? Where does it come into me? I understand these words, and I can understand in business, but I'm looking for principles by which I can learn to live. And I was taught to believe that there is no difference in a spiritual principle, whether it be at home, at business, at play, or in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. If I'm selectively using principles at various places to suit my needs, it is a parody and it is a joke. And it is contrary to my own welfare. Tradition four is possibly given me one of the great, great prizes I have received in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because if those of you who may not be aware of it, I certainly was not until I read it. And my face just lit up like a Christmas tree. I've got it in my office. It is at my home. It is in my garage. And they talk about Rule 62. Don't take yourself so damn seriously. What a concept! It never entered my mind. I knew that if I did not take this world and its people in it seriously, nobody would, and certainly not my wife. And somebody had to do this. And that was obviously my job. And you said not to take myself so damn seriously, and I said, oh my God, what'll I do? And they said, you might learn how to smile. What a concept. What a dreadful concept. The weight of the world falls off your shoulders when you become aware of that. Okay, and then I became aware of the fact that I can be autonomous. I can do whatever I want to do. I can go wherever I want to do. I can do all those things I want to, except when it affects other people or society as a whole. If I want $1 million, I can't go out and get a gun and acquire it. You know? Okay. If I want to have a little bit of fun with another lady, it is not available to me by force, guile, maneuvering, or purchase. I say that because this is my principle. Okay. I am autonomous. You know, Pablo, who likes to talk a great deal, and I love to listen to that young man. And he talks about you can do anything you want to. You can go anywhere. You can do anything as long as you're willing to pay the price for the consequences of your actions. And I never knew that. You see, I had so many preconceptions and so many things I couldn't do because of this. And I couldn't do this. I can't do that. And because of this, and I had never an idea that I was free to go as long as I was willing to pay the price. I was taught by a magnificent man that the object of life was to spontaneous living. Spontaneous living, being free Our book talks about being free. Free to go. Free to come. Free to do whatever you wish to do. Okay? And I was also taught that there's probably only one great bondage in life is the absolute freedom that we have. Because there is a law that says that as you sow, so shall you reap. And I didn't know that one. Okay? I didn't know that. I just thought I had so many chains upon me, I never realized that I was a walking case of freedom, provided I knew how to live my life. And so I am autonomous. Even though sobriety is the sole objective of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it is the sole objective of Alcoholics Anonymous, the most fascinating thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is that whole concept is to take the hopeless, sick, alcoholic who has no hope, no future, and sober him up. And allow him a means by which he can stay sober for the rest of his life, for good and for all. That's the sole objective. Absolutely. Sole objective. That's the only thing that happened here. Except all the world opened up. And they talk about it, the greatest social movement of the 20th century. The byproduct of that is the fact that we are forced, out of necessity, we are forced to live a life based upon spiritual principles. Our fifth tradition says that our group has but one primary purpose, to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. That's what we're supposed to do. Carry the message, not the disease. Carry the message, not money, not girls, not men. Carry the message. Okay. Singleness of purpose is where I start to get it. Singleness of purpose. There's a great deal of controversy going on, always and probably always will, in Alcoholics Anonymous on singleness of purpose. And I'm not interested in getting into that controversy because I consider that this certainly an outside issue while I'm talking at this podium. Okay, and I have, therefore, no opinion on it. That's what I'm talking about. Singleness of purpose is a whole new concept when I start looking at it relative to the fifth tradition. Now, in Alcoholics Anonymous, carrying the message to the alcoholic, the only value that I have, if I have value, and I do, the only value I have with another alcoholic is to share with you my experience, my strength, and my hope. What did I do? Where did I fall down? And how did I get out from under it? Singleness of purpose. And I suddenly realized behind that, there's a thing goes on, I think on a radio constantly, it talks about everybody's got opinions, but there's only a couple truths. Okay. I had opinions, my God, I had opinions. And most of the people in the world needed to know my opinions. And there are a lot of people who have a lot of opinions, and some of them might be very good. But I'm not interested in opinions in Alcoholics Anonymous. My singleness of purpose says each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholics who still suffers. And I have found an amazing piece of information, both at home and at play and in business and in the fellowship here, that if I stick with my own experiences and its lessons and spend no time talking about what you did, and why you really did it, I have a powerful message to learn. And I'm constantly, because I'm learning this message, I have to continue to do an inventory, constantly trying to find out. I have the privilege of sponsoring or working with a number of young men. Okay. And I am absolutely amazed at the things that I didn't know I knew. I'm just absolutely dumbfounded. It is not a night that comes by that some young man may sit across from me and he'll have a dilemma. And I will start to say, I don't know a thing about it. And suddenly, out of my experience, because when you get old, you have a lot of experiences. You see, you've got a lot of experiences. But it wasn't until I got to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous that I knew that there was a lesson to be at the end of the experience. My teacher taught me that I am the sum and total of all of my life experiences and its lessons. And without the lessons learned, I am just a mass of experiences running around waiting to do it again. And I did it over and over again until I got here. Now, because I have singleness of purpose, I can stay with my own personal experiences, its lessons, and not yours. I can come in here and I have a singleness of purpose, my own singleness of purpose. It isn't to be the leader. It isn't to be the chairman of everything. It isn't to be president. It is to share my own experience, strength, and hope. It isn't to give you money, to take money. It isn't to do any of those things. I stay with my singleness of purpose. Okay? And it's vitally important for me to know that. That is the fifth tradition for me. Tradition 6. An AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside print enterprise, lest problems of money, property, prestige diverge from our primary purpose. You see, I looked at that and said, well, I can understand that. Because if we're poverty poor, it's necessary that we stay that way. Because I've seen it. I remembered when I was looking at this tradition, I understood this one right away. I remember when I was much younger, I had a high school buddy, a kindergarten buddy. He's still a friend of mine. We've known each other since kindergarten. We were involved in a business deal. And this is how it made sense to me. And because of our involvement in this business deal, it looked like it was going to be outrageously expensive or successful. And it appeared at the time we were worth paper millions. Now that's a lot of money. A dreadful amount of money. And we're talking a long time ago when millions were worth a lot more than millions today. Okay. And I was saying I'm secure for life and I can retire and just invest my portfolio and just have a wonderful time. And I'm not yet 30 when this is happening. And then this property and this prestige and all of the excitement. He was the president of this corporation and I was the vice president and chairman of the board. Okay. And I went on a vacation. And I came back and I saw my best friend. When I came back, I no longer was a member of the board of directors. My options had been taken away from me. And I was a very minor player in a very major business. And I said, God, would I ever do anything like that? And then I couldn't honestly answer that question. And I say to that young man, that isn't it a shame that everybody has a price? Okay. And the reason I started looking at that is I said, wow, here's my very best friend. And I would have to tell you that I've been best man at one of his weddings and an usher in the first, a best man in his second wedding, and he was best man at my wedding. So talking about a friendship that goes very, very deep. And I realized the devastation and the pain and the hurt that comes personally to me when problems of money, property, and prestige diverted him from what our primary purpose was. And I knew that I would never, ever want to get in that position. When I put it in that vein, it certainly made it Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous and the need to avoid Alcoholics Anonymous getting into that dreadful trap by reading about how the boys back in the days when they first founded and desperately needed money had to abandon the money and not accept it and accept the vow of poverty. And so I looked in and I said to myself, what is this? What do I have to have? How do I rephrase this particular thing so it makes sense to me? And I am here, and you are here, by the grace of a loving God, the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. This program is, was, and always will be a program that is dependent upon a life based upon spiritual principles. It is clearly stated that. I read that little excerpt in the first tradition. And so I said, oh, I cannot use these spiritual gifts for personal gain. That means now how much that can affect me. I cannot use this magnificent thing called Alcoholics Anonymous for personal gain, for any personal gain. Now, I have, for those of you who do not know, is that I was one of the original founders of the Fellowship of Saturday Night Live. And throughout the years, I'm the only one that's still left in this group, okay, from the original founding group. And because of that, many people have attempted to give me some power, some prestige that I cannot accept, though the temptation is constantly there. Okay. Thank God there is a principle of my own that I know that I cannot accept for personal gain. Because remembering and cross-referring back to the other principle where it said that our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. There are many times that people have approached me and say that I have such influence, I can do this. I get isn't that wonderful feeling inside? Thank God I do not have to respond to it. And quite honestly, I've seen other people do things that I would not want to ever do myself. Because, you know, you can cash in on a lot of stuff. And the alcoholics of the world are such angle shooters that I believe if there's a way to milk a quarter out of anything, we'll find it. It is necessary. Remember, I started this by saying, I don't know how to do life. I've never known how to do life. Yet it seems as if I'm doing life. And why is that? It's because not only do these traditions work for the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, they work so ever good in my own life. Tradition 7, self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Now, normally, and perhaps not in jest, and maybe in jest, okay, we use the phrase, I become entirely self-supporting through my own contributions. Okay, and that's certainly very acceptable, but I was looking for something a little bit deeper and a little more meaningful to me, because, you see, if we bought money or we accepted money, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous accepted money elsewhere, that would give control and power and some authority to people. This is a fellowship that is working very successful when the nuts are running the asylum, and that's the way it should be. And we cannot give. We are autonomous, and no one should have any say-so within the group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay. I said earlier I am responsible to contribute. Okay. I am responsible to contribute anything, both in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and outside the fellowship. When I talk about contribute, I'm talking about contribute. I'm not necessarily talking about money, but I am talking about money. I am talking about picking up ashtrays. It is necessary. I am talking about volunteering after the meetings. It is necessary for me because I'm responsible to contribute both in and out. Contribute to life instead of taking out. I am responsible to put a dollar in that basket when it comes, if I've got a dollar. I know how painful it was for me the two times that I was so dreadfully broke in Alcoholics Anonymous to watch that thing go by and know that I couldn't put a dime in it. Okay? And how much it hurt me. And yet I also see, and you've all seen, many of us, and maybe you're one, who let the basket go by and you got a wad of money in your pocket. That's your business, but it is my business is simply this. I must contribute. If you need help, If I have the time and the date is open, I go and I do for the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am responsible to contribute. And the most amazing thing, and this is the dichotomy and the crazy thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, in all of our areas, you contribute but you get back more than you contribute. It is always that way. If I put every dollar I had in this basket today, I would get more back in different fashion. And maybe the money. I don't know. But I am responsible. So, I don't panhandle. I don't panhandle, again, as I'm using that phrase, because it's contained, once again, in Tradition 7. I don't look the other way when the basket's passed. Okay. To conveniently not fumble around. I don't look somewhere, wait for somebody else to pick up an ashtray. I try to grab the broom when we had the broom sitting out here. Not anymore. Okay. I volunteer when I've got the time. I am always available. And for that, I am responsible. That is mine. That is my responsibility. And as I tell you, and I would point out something, here I am standing up before you in a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm sharing my experience, strength, and hope, and I'm telling you what I believe. Now, I'm a visible target, and I've been a visible target for a long time. And believe me, whenever I stumble in these rooms or outside these rooms, and a fellow member of Alcoholics Anonymous sees me, they tell me. Okay. And I think that's an angle shoot as far as I'm concerned, because when I stand up here and tell you, you see, there's some people that have known me for a long, long time, and nobody's called me liar yet. And that forces me. I'm ever hard upon myself and considerate of others, as our fellowship says, but this forces me to walk the talk. And I believe in that intensely. Our eighth tradition is Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Now, come on, says me when I'm looking at this, saying, what does that mean? You know, I understand what it means to Alcoholics Anonymous because they had a lot of problem. You know, we got people down at central office that are getting paid. They're getting paid out of your donations. Well, why shouldn't they just volunteer their free time? Good God, you go down there and find out what those people do on a daily basis. Okay? And you, well, the last time, just as an example, that job is so demanding and so difficult that we had to go for, well, we're still waiting for a replacement for the one that's going to resign. She's a willing to stay here long enough until a replacement is signed, found. God knows how many years it is. And yet we have people saying, well, they should be free. They should really, because what a privilege it is to be of service to Alcoholics Anonymous. Crap. Okay? It is a privilege to be of service to Alcoholics Anonymous, but when you are doing work that belongs to Alcoholics Anonymous and you have no other work to do, you need to be properly paid. And that's what he's talking about, employed special workers. But we're non-professional. Okay, and I started looking at, well, yeah, I'm a professional. And I come to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and they don't pay me. And I do 12-step work and nobody pays me. And I go speak out of town and sometimes they give me expenses and sometimes they don't. Okay? Expenses like a roof over my head and maybe some gas money. Okay? And I say, well, what is it? I understand all of these things. What does it really mean to me? Because, you see, I don't know the traditions by heart. I don't. I don't know them by heart, and I don't have to, I couldn't even probably give them to you in order. That's not the point. But what is vital to me is to know how I must live them. Because if I know how to live them, I will not violate them when I am dealing within the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I came up with what I think a delightful little, I am quite pleased with my principle contained in this in the eighth tradition. Because I believe that it's love without a price tag. It's a true motive for anything. I was taught that. The only motive, probably the only real motive for doing anything is love. For nothing. But just for the joy of loving somebody. Whether it be in or out of Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay, now I came in here and I started. I started 12-stepping because I had to 12-step. I can't tell you what my motives were, is that I just felt that I had to demand the 12-step. And I started doing it. And then I got rewarded, and I started doing it. And then I started getting important. Because I was doing 12-step work, and you guys weren't doing it. You know, I was doing a lot. And as a matter of fact, I heard somebody stand at the podium once, and he said, at the time I was doing all this 12-step call, all the 12-step calls in Santa Clara Valley, there were only three of us in the whole damn valley doing that. And I said, I'm one of those three, and I was important. Okay. I say, they should call me. Say, Hey, let Carney come out and 12-step me, you know, because I was that important. I managed to get there was no diverter. I managed to get the answering service. It was back in those days, the answering service to call me in the evening. So I got all the evening calls in Alcoholics Anonymous because I was important. And I'll really, really take this world by storm because I'm an important person. And I started realizing the benefits that I had gotten from this thing. And I wasn't doing it for money, property, power, or prestige, although at that time, for a period of time, I was. What the object was that I attempt to practice is love. Doing it for free and for fun without a price tag. No price tag in giving away what was so freely given to me. It's not even that you have to listen to me. Certainly not that you have to stay sober if I've got something to offer. Although sometimes I think you should. Okay. What it is I have to give and share with you everything I got to the best of my ability and let it chips fall where they may out of love. And I practice that by talking it. I practice that when I say that people say, John, can I have an appointment to talk to you? Or can I talk to you? And I say this to remind myself because it's a quote from my teacher. I'll share anything I have with love to remind me that that's the object, is love. Tradition 9. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Now, that's a hard one to look at when you're in the fellowship of Saturday Night Live. We're so damned organized at times that it looks like the starch is going to break, you know? Purpose of our informed group conscience, for those of you who are asking that question, was to record the things that we have done and failed and the things that we've done and worked so that we wouldn't have to constantly reinvent the wheel. That was the purpose of that. They are not bylaws. Their label is informed group conscience, although sometimes they are used as bylaws. That's not the intent. Okay. It says in Tradition 9, that no one, even it says, nor the humblest group committee can issue a single directive to an AA member and make it stick, let alone mete out any punishment. I've seen some people that have been trying to do some stuff. You see, I learned so much, not only from the people, I probably learned without any exception more from the people who are doing stuff I don't like than I will ever learn from the people who are doing what I like. Okay, it's because I can just recognize crap when I see crap because I've been living with crap most of my life. I'm familiar with that. Good works are new to me, so I don't identify so well. And I can believe that I am not much different than most members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I come in with here not knowing what to do, but oh God, do I have a list of what not to do's. And when you don't do the what not to do's, you got a whole new world to walk around. Well, I do. Well, you don't do that, so you do something else. Then you find out that works, or you find out you got another what not to do. And if you don't do the what not to do's, you wind up with things to do. And it's just the damnedest thing I've ever seen, and they work. Okay? So, I can't stand before you and say, you've got to get out of here. Now, if you are making an unsightly disturbance, and I have done this, and you will not quiet down, and you might be drunk or something like that, and the common welfare of the group comes first, then I have assisted some people in taking out someone who is doing that and suggesting very firmly as they are flying out the door to keep come back. All you have to do is keep quiet, and you can come back. But you can come back in right now, you see, with a smile on your face as you lick your... I'm talking about my perfect ideals and things that I try to work by. It's not necessary to stick these upon another human being. Okay, now this is a real big one for me, the ninth tradition. Because I realized the necessity of it in the ninth tradition because of the long form here. And this is a powerful one for me. And I'd ask everybody, if you haven't already done this, to take a long look at it. And the reason I say that is that I will read out of the 12 by 12. It says, unless each AA member follows to the best of his ability our suggested 12 steps to recovery, it says, unless we do this, follows to the best of his ability our 12 steps of recovery, he almost certainly signs his own death warrant. His drunkenness and dissolution are not penalties inflicted by people in authority. They result from his personal disobedience to spiritual principles. I don't even want to disobey a spiritual principle, even on an accident. So I eagerly search these principles and I find them. Okay, and of course, naturally, the same thing applies to the group itself. We must adhere to these principles. It's vital that we do that. But it's vital for me to live to these principles too. And when I understand that, it's easier for me to understand why it is necessary for the group to do so. And my spiritual principle on the ninth tradition is that I will state it this way. I no longer have the authority to discipline or punish myself or you for my humanness. You see, I can get so hard upon me, as my tradition says, that I should not. I can get so hard on me and crucify me as I used to do, and I can no longer stay here. I will run. I can get so hard on you, and I can get so bitter against you, and I can order you around so much so that this thing is no longer a safe place, and you will rebel and throw my fanny out of here. I will be unhappy with myself. I will do those things, and I cannot live that way anymore. And I had to deal with that. Now, I'm totally convinced that I will not argue with anyone. I may not be responsible for the thoughts that come in my mind, but by God, I am certainly responsible for what I keep. And so I refuse to be a victim of my own mind anymore, because I don't have to. And so I no longer have the authority to beat me up, nor do I have the authority or the right to beat you up. That's vital. The tenth tradition. Now, you didn't know this was going to be a speaker's meeting, but that's coming close. The format didn't say that, but I was told to talk until I was done. Now, I hope you brought lunch or a cot. So we're coming down and closing. I'm going to get on time. The tenth tradition. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, since the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. We have no opinions on outside issues. That means that we cannot get in any public controversy on religious. I know we hear many comments about religion. You may have an opinion on religion, but the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous does not. You may have an opinion on drugs and or other related disorders, but the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous does not, because we cannot get involved in that controversy, or we will fraction right now. If I started arguing Democrats, Republicans, Foreman, and Holyfield, and all of the rest of that stuff, as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's going to be some problems in this room. And some of you might not even like me, and that will be too bad. And if you disagree with me, I might have to teach you the errors of your way. And what's worse, you might have to teach me the errors of my ways. And I wouldn't like that either. So then I start to look at it once again. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. What does that mean to me personally? Well, I've got opinions on every issue. Now, how does that affect me and my own personal principle of life in these hallowed halls and outside these rooms? And then I came up with something that fits me and hopefully will fit you. It says that I cannot gossip or judge anyone publicly. Now, I can sit there and get caught into some crap on the sides outside And if somebody wants to badmouth somebody, I don't believe that I have the right to do that. But sometimes I get caught up in that. But I cannot come into here and start being the gossip mongers and the rat faces that run around and doing this and that. Did you hear what this? And you know, my wife and I are very blessed is because this is my principle and very few people spread any rumors in our direction. My wife and I are both heavily involved in Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. And we got a whole bunch of stuff that we're not supposed to know. Okay. And if I use that information, I would surely die and a lot of people would be hurt. But the thing that I'm so blessed about is the crap of gossip rarely comes our way. And I found that that's another piece of information that is so vital that I learned. Is that angry people live in angry worlds. Happy people seem to find a happy world to live in. Sober people seem to find sober worlds. And gossipers seem to find gossip. Now, I don't gossip, and so I rarely hear it. And you see, I don't have the right to attack you in any fashion, even if I'm right, and particularly if you really need it. It's not mine to judge. Tradition 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. I already talked about that a little way because my name was John Carney. And if you really want it, and I don't know why you would, my middle name is Eugene. Okay? I can even tell you I was born the night of the long count, and for those of you who are a boxing fan, know that. The long count is the night that Jack Dempsey and Gene Tunney fought, and I was named after both of them. I have a long-lasting resentment. If Dempsey had won, my name would be Jack Dempsey Carney, and I would have had a dreadful time living up to that rap. But as it was, my dad was a drunk and a poor loser. Dempsey lost. They named me Jack Gene, and the person who filled out my birth certificate did it wrong and renamed me John Eugene. Now, if that's not a resentment, I don't know what is. Okay. But I have no opinion, you understand that. I am totally within the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay. I have no anonymity. I cannot break your anonymity unless you give me permission to do that. And I don't run around asking it. My name is in the telephone book. I'm in Los Gatos. I was 5 years sober and I suddenly realized I wasn't hiding from anybody for the first time in my life. And I put my name in the book. What an exciting thing. There I was in print. And nobody come and got me. Wow, what freedom there was in that. So I talk about our public relations policy is based on attraction. And I started to put that back to me. Now I suddenly realize that I get a new thing that makes sense to me. Is that my personal relationship with you, with business, with my family, within all of my affairs, my personal relations policy is based upon attraction rather than promotion. You know, I have a lot of guys that come over, personal attraction. Who and what I really am, if you can't take me the way I am, then I'm going to have to be something phony. And I came in here phony, and I learned how to become as real as I currently am, and I'm going to become more real. But, you know, it's kind of like, and I draw the analogy quite frequently, to the dating scenario. Two people are attracted to each other, apparently for who and what they really are. And as soon as an individual recognizes that there is an attraction, immediately they start to change to promote the attraction. Because they surely wouldn't like you the way you are right now. And so you get involved in a phony relationship with some phony person that you don't even know, for crying out loud, and it's not the person that you were involved in and grew to like initially. So we start promoting ourselves and covering up our grossest defects as if we were a judge of them. Okay, so my personal relations policy is based upon attraction rather than promotion. I think it's necessary. Vital for me. Tradition 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. I've done a lot of talk about principles that I'm talking about. Do you know that there's probably some people out there that don't believe me? Now, I can talk about them and I can assassinate them and all the rest of that stuff, but my principles will not let me do that. Even though sometimes they just so desperately need it. Okay. Now, anonymity is a spiritual foundation of traditions. Now, and then I talk about the most important things that I have ever done in my entire life. And I say this without any reservation whatsoever because I've thought about it, because I understand what my personal tradition is, or personal principle of the 12 step is. The greatest things I have ever done in my entire life, no one but me knows. And no one but me will ever know. Me and the God of my understanding. The greatest things that I've ever done in my entire life, the one that gives me the greatest warm fuzzies, it's not out of ego or pride. It's such a delight. You see, because I can't tell you. Because I'll start taking credit for it. And then I'll go out and try something better. And everybody say, wow, look at that spiritual giant. And I'll get bigger and bigger, and then I'll pop. I just pop. You know? And you know, okay, so I have to maintain the spiritual aspect of it is the principle of anonymity. Quiet. My last name I can have a lot of fun with on the telephone or on the podium, and I have a lot of fun in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I always have. Well, after my first 4 months, I've had a ball in Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay. I believe my personal principle is everything I do in here is for free and for fun. Okay. I got no hooks. I've got no hooks, and I don't think we should. When I say that, I go up and offer you whatever it is that I think you might need. If you don't want it, it's too bad. I walk away because it's not demanded that you listen to me. I'm standing here in front of the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm giving you my best shot. Okay. And most of you stayed. Amazing. Because I don't think I would have if I were listening to me. But I got to listen to me because I'm here and because I'm the one that's supposed to talk. But that's not the point. The point I'm making is that this is for free and for fun. And where did I come from this? A long time ago, I was asked to speak in a town. My wife and I were both asked to speak. And it was an AA meeting. We were asked to speak in a small town. Okay. And I was pretty important then. A lot more important than I am right now. And these people were just so overwhelmed by the beauty of our message that they wanted us to come to this town and they wanted to give us a number of months so that they could prepare for our awesomeness. And they were going to put out these flyers and they're going to have this big deal and a potluck. And then when everybody was settled in, we'd speak. And I was ready for that. And so we went there. But because I'm such a person, I had to go there early. I went there a night earlier because I had to make sure that these people, that I got there in plenty of time. So I went there a full day early because, God, they would have died if I had not been there to deliver this powerful message. We went to this particular club, and it was in a club in a very small town. And it was wall-to-wall people, and I was impressed. I would have liked the room to have been bigger, because then there would have been more people in it, you know, and more people that would have benefited from the magnificent word that I had to offer. And we had this dinner, this potluck dinner, and it was beautiful. And then the potluck dinner was over, and everybody left. When we stood up to talk, there were two people in that room. Okay. And I had to deal with that. And then a short later, two more people came in. But they were people from San Jose who came to find us, listen to us. So we spoke to an audience of four. Four of them from San Jose, and I'd already heard me. And I said and realized, I had a price tag on that thing. I wasn't there for free or for fun. I was there to sell something and promote myself. I had a hook. The only reason I had agreed to speak there is because there's going to be a whole bunch of people there. What a powerful lesson it was. You see, I am awestruck that I come to the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and particularly this evening, the Saturday Night Live, to find such a fine, attentive group of people who are wanting to listen to possibly the driest summary you can get, so-called the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. I see that nobody's gagged, parched for lack of this or lack of that. And if I've done one thing that is of any real value here this evening, I know that I have reinforced my own beliefs that I've shared with you this evening. And if any of you pick up any of this thing and have any value in it, I'm blessed. But if you don't, I'm still blessed. You see, I have been blessed from the moment I walked into the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're full of contempt, hatred, angry, and afraid. My fear was so buried so deeply within me, I did not know that it existed. And I became aware that that night was the greatest single moment of my entire life. And I was blessed. And if I continue to practice these principles as I understand them and continue the search to find additional principles of spiritual nature, I, like you, will continue to be blessed. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.